Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. We've had a week off to mourn the losses against Ireland and England, and we are back and ready to take on the Italians as ever, joined on the other side of the table, Matt and Alan. How are you, boys?
Yep, all good here.
Doing all right.
You're doing all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
As good as you ever are, the most negative man in Scottish rugby.
I'm a five.
You've got a 5 out of 10 is about as good as we can ask.
Yeah.
But we do have something very special for us and for you, the listeners. We're joined today by Scotland legend Richie Vernon. Richie, how are you, man?
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on. Pleasure to be with some guys that live and breathe Scottish rugby.
Are you saying that you don't live and breathe Scottish rugby?
No, I live and breathe it as much as anyone else, but you guys really, really live it.
Say Scottish, Glasgow, and Stewmell legend Richie Vernon.
Yes, Stewmell legend. There was two. I clarified that you had played for Stewmell on Twitter because I'd left out the initial announcement, and there was two responses. One saying a high point of a great career, and the other one was a horrible stain on an otherwise perfect career. And I really think that's a good moment.
But it's not on your Wikipedia page, Stewmell. Stewmell. So I might have to edit that.
Is air on it? Because
yes. Air is on it, yeah.
Because I was drafted to Air, but I never actually played for them.
Ah. See, two amendments to the Wikipedia. Yeah. There we go.
My brother once amended my Wikipedia page to add himself to it.
So oh, really?
Yeah, he changed it to brother of David Vernon, just as the first line. So yeah, it seems like you can put on whatever you like.
Nice one.
Well, speaking of people who live and breathe Scottish rugby, you guys have all been keeping in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. If you've noticed a bit of a change in the tone, Alan has worked out the password for the Instagram, so he's been putting up some very questionable memes.
Literally all I do is look at memes, is try and create Scottish rugby memes. A real sort of niche in the market I'm going after.
Yeah, it's really good, really good as well. You got Simon Zebo to bite.
Yeah, he had a like. I do feel quite bad though, because you send on average about 6 a day and there's sort of no response for about 2 hours, and then I just kind of go, ha, just to
the
you know, boost the confidence.
And you know it's not allowed to go up.
Yeah. The quantity, not quality. That's important as well.
Just chucking ideas out there, yeah. You know, seeing what sticks.
And there have been lots of people in the mailbag as ever, thethistlerugby@gmail.com. And as ever, the sources have been sliding into the DMs all week, giving us all sorts of scurrilous rumours and gossip from inside the camp. Some of it absolutely not broadcastable. Some of it we will maybe get into later on. So in today's episode, we're going to have a bit of a chat to Richie, but mostly we're going to talk about news from the last week, a few re-signings in the Scottish clubs, and then look forward to the Italy game. Kicking it off with a man who's been on his travels for the last couple of years, but Sam Hidalgo-Klein has bagged himself 2 years at Exeter after, you know, jobbing around for sort of 6 months here, 6 months there for the last while. That seems like a good result for everybody concerned.
Yeah, as you say, I think the fact it's a 2-year deal and he was going around in sort of medical jokers at Racing and Lyon, I think, is really good. If he can recapture some of that form that he did show at Edinburgh that got him into that 2015 World Cup squad, then it's a good option to have in the mix for the national squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And a couple other names at Glasgow who you'll be familiar with, Richie, Pete Horn and Rob Harley, both re-signed for Glasgow. A couple of your mates, know them well?
Yeah, two absolute stalwarts of Glasgow, basically through some of the less successful times at the start and now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they've two guys who have been kind of fundamental to the success of that club over kind of the last sort of 10 years. So good signings for Glasgow, and they'll be important if anything else. I think Bob's played about 700 games for them already.
Yeah.
So just to keep that consistency going and hopefully have set the cultural stuff, yeah, which is important for them.
Did you start around the same time as those two?
I would have been slightly before, and I remember them both coming through. Pete, I was flatmates with Pete for quite a few years.
Okay.
Bob, I remember first coming into the side, and I had no idea how to take him. I actually, when he first arrived at training, I thought he was genuinely terrible. He just looks like that sort of guy that you don't know if he's good or not. And then the first game, he was awesome. And ever since, he's been awesome. And he's just very good. He's just so good at what he does. He's really consistent. He's incredible.
I feel like it's maybe the polar opposite of Pete Horn, where I imagine Harley in a touch rugby game might be one of the worst players of all time. Whereas I think Pete Horn might be like one of the best touch rugby players of all time.
They're both actually pretty good at touch, right? It's definitely not Bob Harley's strength,
yeah,
I would say. If there's contacts involved, he's better at that. But yeah, he's basically effectively a robot, and he will give 100% to everything that he does, even in touch. He just doesn't switch off. So if there's a game where it's the start of training and everyone's sort of 50% on, Bob will be fantastic because he's just into it straight away.
And you started the Pro 12 final with Pete Horn in centre.
Yeah, that's right. So I was at that stage of my career, I think I was quite lucky because Alex Dunbar and Mark Bennett both kind of got injured towards the middle part of the season. So towards the tail end, it was basically me and Pete, and I think we started the last 8 games into the final. Wow. Got a good run of games kind of together, worked really well, and yeah, kind of lucky with how it all came together and then being able to play a part in that final, which was pretty awesome.
We'll come back to look at a little bit more of that later on. Last bit of news, Dave Cherry has signed a couple of years at Edinburgh as well. He's been a fairly solid squad player after the success of Stade Niçois.
Yeah, I mean, Stade Niçois paying back in spades.
Yeah. Bit of time in the third division of France, 20 fags, back up to Scotland, here we go.
Starting for Edinburgh against Scarlets the weekend.
Yeah,
so
that's all you need.
Starting ahead of that, Williamsey. So, to be fair, you're probably not going to get into the Scotland team with McAnally, Brown and Turner, but definitely not a bad person to have in the kind of fallow weeks where they've just not got those Scottish lads. So, and that front row with Hicks, Schumann, and I've actually forgotten who else was playing prop at the weekend. But generally, it just allows Edinburgh to have an incredibly strong tight five, even with so many of their players in the Scotland team.
Absolutely. So well done to all of them. Other news is that there's essentially no news in the Finn-Tooney standoff. I think Mike Blair confirmed it at the Scotland press conference today that there has been no communication between both sides since Finn's interview in the Sunday Times, where he definitely looked in the photos very remorseful.
But I mean, still kind of had a on and off game against Toulouse, it looks like, at the weekend. So obviously Racing won in the last minute after he'd been subbed, and he gave one kind of try scoring pass and then also gave an interception for one of the Toulouse players to score like an 80 meter run in.
So the fool Russell.
The fool Russell. Everything. Still hanging out with Zebu on Instagram, having a great time.
Yeah, his life does look pretty good, to be honest.
Richie, what have you made of the whole, what's your take on Finn v Tooney gate?
You know we had to ask you.
Yeah.
I've got to tread very carefully here. I, as a Scottish rugby fan, I'm just kind of a bit disappointed and frustrated about how it's all played out. Obviously, played with Finn, fantastic player. You know, Gregor was, you know, my coach for a while at Glasgow and Scotland. And it just seems like it's kind of the straw that's broke the camel's back. And there's probably a bit of a disagreement there, maybe slightly culturally, maybe slightly tactically. And there was obviously an incident that maybe caused it as well. But it seems more like they've obviously, their relationship has sort of broken down, and they might disagree about maybe the playing style or the way the camp should be. And it's just sad because you hope that it doesn't come to that, effectively one of your best players and your coach, he's forced to kind of walk away. So my take is I'd love to see them resolve it as soon as possible, but I don't see it happening anytime soon. And I'm not really sure how it happens at this stage. So maybe it's something that gets revisited after the Six Nations.
Yeah. It increasingly feels like it's going to be a post-Six Nations kind of thing to deal with.
I don't know how, unless it would require Townsend essentially completely giving back control of the Scotland squad to the players, I think, at this stage, to step back and say, Finn, you're back. Because particularly without any sort of apology.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. One of the interesting things that's come out is the kind of differing coaching styles between Cotter and Townsend. And actually the fact that Cotter kind of gave more of a kind of, this is the framework, but actually once you've kind of got past first phase, it's kind of up to you guys to kind of play as you see, whereas Townsend's a lot more kind of detailed orientated. Is that kind of what it was like when you were in kind of in both setups?
Yeah, it's very accurate, I would say. So like Finn and Vern basically got on like a house on fire. I think Vern thought Finn was kind of the best player ever. You know, it was a time when he was playing fantastically for Scotland as well. And he definitely gave him a lot more of a wider remit to just go and play what he sees. I think that's probably just a New Zealand coaching thing in general.
Yeah.
I think they believe that their players over in New Zealand have kind of better decision-making skills, so they can be a bit looser with the framework of the game plan and they can just go and do things and it works out for the best. Gregor has had loads of success from being really detail-oriented, not just in the game plan, but kind of how he wants things off the field, kind of recovery, everything. He puts a lot of detail into everything. And Finn, although he's been a part of that, he is just a bit of a maverick, as you can see from his playing style. He's a maverick. He's a great teammate as well, though. I mean, he's got someone that works hard, prepares well. So, yeah, I think there probably is. It's got to a stage where I would imagine, and there's probably speculation, Finn's in France, they're known to be pretty loose as well, and I'm sure he's enjoying the style of rugby that he's playing over there, and maybe has been slightly frustrated. Scotland, after the World Cup, or certainly even before the World Cup, from what I heard, are moving, and you can see it from the way they're playing, to a bit more of a tactically territory sort of game plan. And they've looked into the stats and they've seen that when we kick more, when we win territory, we tend to win.
Yeah.
So you can see they're trying to evolve to that. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of the players aren't immediately on board with that, because when we played Glasgow, and a lot of the success we got there was a really wide, expansive game plan. There was a lot of detail there, but it was a bit more wide and expansive. So it might just be partly that, but they've definitely got very different coaching styles. They're similar in some ways how they want the team to play, but in terms of the amount of detail they put into it, it's very different.
Not wanting to start a rumour, but I saw today that Cotter had left Montpellier with immediate effect.
Yep.
And he's not starting in Fiji till at least for another sort of 6 months.
Private jet to Rome.
Private jet to Rome.
He's ousting. There's a coup d'etat as we speak in the playing group.
Tooney's just going to walk in. Vern Cotter is leading like the team huddle. He's like,
it's already
happened. You're out, Tooney.
Finn's back. He's waving at him. I'd support that. That'd be amazing. That'd be great fun. One of the things that's been talked about an awful lot in the press about that moment which you talked about, that straw that broke the camel's back, the two beer rule, something that you recognise from your time as a professional rugby player, a couple of beers after the game, or that sort of rules about alcohol being astringent?
Very rarely I've had, there's been a specific two beer rule, but I think generally it's been kind of, look,
Don't take the piss,
literally. Right. if we've got training the next day, you know, you're men and you can have a beer, but you need to be prepared. You're representing your country. So whatever's going to work best for you and the team. And obviously, I can see where the two come from, because when it gets beyond that, you might be taking the piss a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think it depends on the coach as well. Some are ultra, and I know Gregor's someone that doesn't necessarily give as much leeway in terms of alcohol as some other coaches. Yeah. I think he maybe has some regrets from his playing days that he maybe feel like he could have been a better player if he maybe was a bit less loose. And I don't think necessarily he was particularly loose, but just mm-hmm. felt like he maybe didn't get as much out of his career as he could have had otherwise. So, yeah, it's something that I would recognise for teams, but yeah, two beers specifically seems like a strange definitive number of beers that you're allowed. Is it 2 pints? Is it 2?
I was just going to say, is it two like little bottles of Heineken? Is it two? They're very different, you know, things.
Different things.
Get 2 steins.
With 2 jugs.
Does it carry over into spirits? I mean, who knows? Are you having a couple of G&Ts? Maybe that's your tipple.
That's true.
Who knows? Well, that's a low-cal option, so maybe that's the more athletic choice. But as ever, we've gone off on a strange tangent. Obviously, the biggest news of this week, and looking ahead to the game of the weekend, the Scotland team for the Italy match was announced today. I'll run you through Rory Sutherland, Stuart McInally, and Xander Ferguson in the front row. Second row, Ben Tullius comes in for the injured Johnny Gray and joins Scott Cummings. Back row, Jamie Ritchie, Hamish Watson, and Magnus Bradbury. Backline, Ali Price at 9, Adam Hastings at 10. Centre, Sam Johnson. Chris Harris comes in for Hugh Jones, who is dropped like a stone out of the 23. And back three, Blair Kinghorn, Sean Maitland, and Stuart Hogg. Talking points, I think, certainly amongst our fans online, is Chris Harris coming in at 13. Should we speak to the international outside centre, Matt, before you jump in here?
Well, I just had the point that someone today described Chris Harris as a budget Richie Vernon. So,
you taking that?
With that in mind.
No, I certainly can't comment on that.
What do you make of that Harris selection coming in for this game?
You can tell that Gregor's a big fan of Harris. Yeah. I think he wanted to give him opportunities in the World Cup. He maybe feels like he brings a stability to the back line that maybe Hugh Jones might not at the moment. Yeah. I mean, that England game was so awful, it was hard for anyone to play well from 13. Totally, so yeah. You feel a little bit sorry for him because Italy hopefully will get a few more opportunities. I was probably a little bit, I wasn't surprised, but I'd love to see someone like Hutchison getting a shot, someone more exciting. But considering the game and the opposition, there's going to be a huge amount of pressure on Scotland to get that win. I think he's probably gone for a bit of a safer choice there. And he's someone that apparently has been on really good form for Gloucester this year. Yeah.
I mean, how much, I think you're right in terms of the selection is maybe a bit more conservative. I mean, how much pressure do you think Townsend is actually under coming into this game?
I think he's under a fair amount. I think he's obviously been under pressure, certainly since the World Cup. I know there's a lot of fans, certainly, that aren't happy. I think that of how he got the job initially and the fact that a lot of people loved Vern Gotter has made it sort of slightly more difficult for him from the start. Sure. But results-wise, he's done pretty well on the whole. So yeah, I think he's obviously under pressure, and I don't think the Finn stuff helps that in any way, shape or form. But potentially at the same time, you look at these three games that are coming up, they could easily win 2 out of those 3. And then all of a sudden the pressure's gone, it's back off.
I think Harris has kind of an issue that he's never played in Scotland. So like a lot of fans don't know who he is.
I think
And I also think he's not really a player that's gonna have like a highlights reel. Rory Hutchinson's the sort of player that's going to have those like nice passes and nice breaks and kind of makes like nice moments on YouTube, whereas Harris is more of he's super solid, he'll make your hard yards. And essentially, he has been starting for Gloucester in a team that includes like Billy 12, Trees, Atkinson, Cipriani, etc. So he's obviously highly valued at Gloucester as well.
Yeah.
It does feel, on the flip side, that it's a selection that's kind of done... It's a kind of a defensive selection rather than an attacking selection. It's more about trying to stop Italy playing their game rather than Scotland implementing their kind of game on
them. Yeah, for sure.
But then there was that graphic that came out on the back of the last World Cup that kind of showed all different outside centres in terms of their carries and metres per carry and all that sort of thing. And Harris was one of the top performers in that role. So I wonder if, as you say, that if Scotland are sort of trying to move more towards a sort of territorial game, that having someone like that is actually pretty important in terms of being able to get over the game line, set up good field position, that sort of thing.
It's funny, the point you mentioned about kind of the fact that Hutchison is, he is probably more exciting. He does have those moments. Mark Bennett's another one that's a bit like that. He's got those moments where he can just produce something out of nothing. Hugh Jones is similar. Chris Harris isn't necessarily that sort of player, but he's maybe the sort of player that a coach really likes because defensively he'll be really good.
Yeah.
He carries well, he'll get off the game line really well. He'll give you consistency, he won't lose the ball. Whereas then someone like Hugh Jones or Hutchison, I know less. You have those flash moments, but then you might see less. Mm. They might be a bit more inconsistent. And I think there's always kind of a trade-off there with a coach's player and the player that fans really want to see, and they can't understand why they're not playing.
Yeah.
What did you think about Rambo coming in for? Because you've obviously played a lot with Fraser.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're both really good players. I think it's an area that Scotland are obviously pretty well serviced with the two of them, and George Turner, who's also a really good player as well.
Yeah.
I think what I've seen from Scotland is they're planning to challenge a lot more around the breakdown these days. You can see there's been a kind of a shift, and it's worked quite well for them defensively the first couple of games. So I think Fraser Brown was probably part of that.
Yeah.
He suits a bit more of that game plan than probably the wide, expansive ball carrying fast rugby. Ramp was probably a little bit better served to kind of do that well. So, and maybe they think it's going to be that more of a game. We'll probably have a bit more of the ball and maybe play a bit less territory. So, I think that's probably a good decision. And those two will kind of rotate round. They're good players and they'll pick on form.
That is the thing with sort of Rambo and Fraser. You're kind of like, one's going to get 55 to 60 minutes and the other one's going to get 30, 35 minutes. And broadly, everyone's kind of happy with whichever one starts, right? Yeah. But on the George Turner, I saw at the weekend, I think he got like, it was either 6 or 8 offloads. I know it was Zebra, but still, like,
yeah,
when he's on form, I mean, he's a bit of a psycho, but he is unbelievable.
He is amazing.
Similar to me and Richie, who went through the Stumel setup as well. So
what happened to you?
You know, injuries. Actually, I've actually never been injured. So
I want to get an idea of Richard's mentality in this week for this Scotland camp. Like, I went deep into the sort of the Wikipedia annals, and I think it's 2011, Six Nations, 4 pretty close losses, and you're heading into the 5th game against Italy with sort of everything riding on the wooden spoon game. What's the mentality in that camp? Are you aware of that sort of, like, is it siege mentality of we've got to just get a win at all costs?
You can feel it from the outside, but obviously all the messages inside are not kind of saying that. You're trying to take pressure off the guys. I mean, you'll feel it. I mean, it's impossible not to feel that. And in the back of your head, it doesn't matter how much kind of positive chat you give about, we're definitely going to win the next 3 games.
Yeah.
You'll feel, you're also aware that we've not won the first 2. There's been things happening in camp. It's going to be a little bit uncertain. So it's a difficult one. Every time we play Italy as well, they are better. Like, they're generally better because they know they've got a better chance against us. Whereas I think when they play England or whoever else, they probably don't feel that way. Which is kind of interesting. So it's going to be I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. I think hopefully, I feel like we've got enough confidence, we've played well enough to get that result, but they need to be quite confident. And if we can get an early lead, that makes a huge difference as well.
Italy have also got Parise coming on off the bench as his like farewell game, which I'm just worried is going to give them like an extra 5-10%.
It gives them,
or
something.
It could be a complete backfire and he comes on and is, I don't know.
When was the last time he played a game of rugby? Is he still playing?
He's
club
still.
Rugby?
He's at Toulon, I think, isn't he at the moment? I'm pretty sure he is. So I mean, he's still playing, but
yeah,
I'm worried that that's going to like he comes on after like 55 or 60 minutes or something. It's a close match, like the crowd just goes absolutely mental. You know,
was it 2 years ago that we went behind and then we sort of just scraped over the line?
It's when Laidlaw got the kick right at the end of the game to win.
That's what I think is going to happen.
But without Laidlaw.
I just think we will do a very classic Scottish versus Italy performance and we'll make a meal of it. Last year at Murrayfield, we went up like by 4 tries and then they scored like 3 in the second half and it looked a little bit ropey for a second.
Yeah.
There's something about it that just sort of sets the jitters about everybody, it seems.
Because the last time was it 4 years ago where we missed the kick to touch when we were ahead, and that was when we lost.
Yeah, that was Pete Horn.
It was.
I remember that.
And a young man named Ben Tulis came off the bench and got yellow carded straight away. Yeah. Anyway, so Ben starting in the second row this weekend was kind of the only other change coming in for Jonny Gray. I think lots of people, I think, were expecting either Skinner to come straight in or Gilchrist to slot in there.
Yeah. Obviously, I don't really understand the line-out, but there's all this obviously chat about how Ben Tulis is like the best line-out operator in Scottish rugby. And obviously, there has been issues with the line-out, especially obviously in the England game.
But yeah.
Conditions were pretty big. But yeah, it seems a little bit surprising. You thought potentially that Gilchrist just gives you that size that... I think there is a fear now that once Brown and Gray are out of that team that we're potentially like a little bit underpowered in the forwards. I think like the back row of Richie, Watson and Bradbury, they are good and they are dynamic, but it feels like they've just been a little bit beaten in the last two games. So, and that's just my main fear, because that kind of Italian back row especially are so powerful and just get over the gain line really, really well. It's going to be a tough one. I think for people like Richie and Watson especially, it's the sort of game, I mean, I don't know how much you've played against Richie and Watson, but it feels like these are the sort of games where they should really be kind of dominating and kind of stamping their mark on games.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's going to be a massive challenge in that back row. We've gone for more, I mean, that's quite an athletic back row, hopefully good over ball, and they've gone for kind of big carriers. You've got three guys there who are very physical, try and like dominate the collisions. So hopefully, I think it's going to be a big challenge. And you saw in the France game, Italy can play some fantastic rugby as well. They look pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
You never know with France, though. I mean, they tend to flick in and flick out of games, so it's hard to even tell what that means. But yeah, they've definitely got a dangerous back row. I think part of being able to get that result is show that physicality, whether that's the 2 second rows or the back row, and winning some of those collisions, which has probably been something that we've not done consistently enough over years, not just the last few games, but probably over years in the Six Nations.
Yeah. I do think that this game's, although Scotland are under pressure, it is a different contest to maybe like 7 years ago or something, 5-7 years ago. I think in the last few years, Scotland have had the measure of Italy and kind of beaten them fairly comfortably, particularly at home. I know it's always a dogfight in Rome, but I'd like to think that Scotland is sort of, as the evolution of this team goes on, that like Italy is no longer a bogey team. Like that's not sort of good enough anymore, if you see what I mean. So I kind of think that Scotland should still be confident of beating this Italian side.
I completely agree. I agree. I was going to pick up one slightly funny bit from Gregor Townsend's press conference today when he was asked about the Tulis choice. He said, "We're looking forward to seeing how he combines with Scott again after a really successful outing against Russia at the World Cup." So I think if that's the level we're operating at, you know, hopefully they're going to be able to step up beyond that.
I mean, it was undoubtedly successful.
It was
very successful.
So we should hope for like a sort of 60-point win based, driven from the directly from the second row. I mean, We've kind of touched on what we think is going to happen in the game. What was your sort of played versus and win record against Italy, Richie? Not to embarrass you live.
I think I definitely lost against them once.
Yeah.
And I think I won 3, lost once. I remember
being
in Italy, and it was one of those games where we just could not get on top of them. We were kind of losing from the start.
Yeah.
I think Alan Jacobson got injured 2 minutes before kickoff or something, and there was
it'd
a bit
the night before
at the start. Can't comment on that. potentially, who knows? And it just didn't go well for us. And there is, when you are in Italy as well, and the crowd get behind, like you mentioned before, it can be a really difficult environment to play in.
I can actually tell you, there's 3 teams that you have 100% record against. Do you know what those three teams are? You're right with Italy. It's 75%.
Romania,
1-0-1.
Yep. Although we were losing at 60 minutes at that game. Fiji,
2-2.
I was going to... I mean, I would have loved to have said Australia, but close, but no cigar.
One from two against the Aussies.
Not Argentina. Not. I mean, it's really difficult as a Scotland international thinking through teams that you've consistently won. That's the hard one. It tends to be the losses that you remember a little bit better. Samoa.
Two out of two against Samoa, and then one. What was the win against South Africa?
We won 21-17.
Yeah.
We'd got absolutely hammered by New Zealand the week before. It was something like 53-6. My first start for Scotland. I've got great memories
Nicky
of that.
Walker.
I was looking at the back row you played against in your first start for New Zealand and the second row, and it's like a joke. Kieran Reid, Rich McCaw, Liam Messam, Brad Thorne, and Ali Williams.
Oh my God.
In terms of first starts, what an incredible experience. I mean, obviously, got absolutely bent over and done it, but it was an awesome game to play. My memories of that game were we got beat by 50, and I actually thought that I played all right, which was strange. And the most ironic thing about it was we played South Africa the next week, and on the Monday we came in, and I remember Andy Robinson was like, "Look, this is my best team. I believe in you guys. You know, I'll give you one more chance, but you need to perform against South Africa." And I got dropped. And I was like, I actually thought I played quite well there. I don't know how it happened. So 14 people got the nod again, and I got dropped to the bench. And the only reason I got onto the bench was because they said, dependent on weather conditions. So he said that if the forecast is for rain, we'll put Jim Hamilton on the bench. But if it's dry, you can play. I tend to get that because I was a skinny back row. It was dependent on the conditions a lot of the time. And in that case, the ironic thing was it was meant to be dry and it was really wet and miserable, but was on the bench and ended up playing 60 minutes. So really, again,
was that when you, was that the match where you made that nice break through the middle?
Yeah, and I got
absolutely... And then backies both to chase you down.
Yeah.
And I remember your head just slamming off the turf. It was like, but I think we maybe got a penalty off it, and that was sort of quite crucial.
I don't know. I got smashed by Zane Kirshner, then by Backies both there, just one-two combination. Yeah. People seem to remember that as much as anything else.
And then was Australia, was that the home win or the one in Newcastle, in Australia?
I was on the bench. The one in Newcastle, I was on the bench, but didn't get on. And it was so wet and miserable that we were all the subs that were left were just hunched in the tunnel, just sort of watching whatever was left of the game from around the corner. The one I played in was at home. I think we won, it was my second cap. We won 9-8, I think.
Was that when
Gitto missed the
kick? Yeah. Oh, what a great day that was.
What great moments.
Yeah.
That was a pretty incredible... I mean, it was a classic Scotland win of that time. Like score less than 10 points, but just get the win.
100%. Yeah. I take that right now.
Oh, yeah. Give me that for the weekend and I'll absolutely bite your hand off for it. So let's finish up on the Italy preview with quick canter round for some predictions starting Matt. What do you reckon, mate? You're going to be there.
I'm at the game there on a stag do. So
you won't remember it.
See what kind of state I'm in. I think it's an early-ish kickoff, so it'll be all right.
So you're kicked out of the stadium in Toulon. Are you going to try and get kicked out of the stadium in Stadio Olimpico?
Toulon was like a 6 o'clock kickoff, so it had enough time to get quite well-oiled.
Yeah.
So hopefully not. I think Scotland will win by...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
10.
Very nice. Alan?
I think it's going to be an Italy win by 2. I don't know. I just feel... I don't know. I might be completely wrong. It just feels like everything's kind of pushing against this Scotland team at the moment, and with Parisi's last game, and it felt like, especially in that kind of second half of the, or kind of the middle portion of that Italy-France game, that Italy kind of getting their groove a little bit. That's my prediction.
The spread's got Scotland by 8.
Yeah, I saw that.
Scotland are 8-point favourites. So
I have put a bet on Scotland to win between 1 and 7. So the gambler in me saw value.
Yeah. And Richie, what do you reckon?
I was going to say Scotland by 8, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like we've got the talent to win by 8 to 12 points. But
yeah,
it's just one of those games that you just don't know. But yeah, I think we'll get a win.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll get a win as well. I think we'll eke it through. Although I'm nervous because, as Alan says, there's an awful lot of narrative on the line here.
Yeah,
the narrative is a big Scotland loss, Tooney's head on the block, and Scottish rugby reaching a new level of rock bottom, which we thought we'd met during Typhoon Hagibis.
This isn't as far down. Is this far down as Typhoon Hagibis?
I don't think we ever really came up after Hagibis, did we?
Okay, so this is just part of the gradual decline.
We've kept tumbling down. Finn was the real, that was the thing that kept us going. But that all being said, I think we will win by sort of like 3 to 5. I think it'll be very tight, cagey affair, not a great game of rugby, but I think we'll come away with a win. And I actually think we might go on and beat France, but that's a separate podcast that we can talk about in the most sort of Scottish thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, good about this point. I think there is, I envisage a scenario where we lose all three games, and I also see a scenario where we win all three games.
Yeah.
And because I actually don't think I think the Wales team's all right, but I don't think they're that good, and I don't think the Scotland players, and it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on this. I always kind of feel like the Scotland players mustn't, you play the Welsh players quite a lot, so you know them and you know what they're like, and you're kind of used to how they play. So does that make it a little bit easier when you're coming up against the Welsh or the Irish?
Yeah, it's a weird one because obviously for my latter years at Glasgow, there wasn't really, and none of the Welsh teams in particular were that great. So
yeah,
we used to hammer them a lot of the time. So
yeah, yeah.
Kind of Cardiff, Ospreys were quite good, Scarlets were quite good, but generally we'd kind of beat them home and away a lot of the time. So then when they'd come together for international time, it was a weird one where you just think these guys are really turning it on when it comes to the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And for some reason it just wouldn't work for us, but they do have kind of more teams, they've got more players to come together, and they just seem to have a way, I don't know whether it's Gatland or whatever else, to just, when it gets to Six Nations times, they can just seem to get over the hump and they can get these wins, these close games, where Scotland just don't really have that.
I have slowly, I think, become more of the view that Gatland's a very good coach. Sort of the longer and longer. I've always sort of slightly hated Gatland. And maybe it's had a bit to do with the Lions and just Scottish players not getting picked. But I think the longer he's had that Welsh team and just the amount of success he's had both with the Wales and with the Lions, and the fact he's now doing pretty well with the Chiefs in New Zealand, you're like, you're probably pretty good.
Yeah, you must be doing something right. I'd kill for a bit of that.
Yeah.
Imagine winning a Grand Slam.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine? It'd
be the best thing ever.
That would be so, so good.
It's going to be really interesting now with PVAC, how he does over the next couple of years. I mean, I think we'll actually see, I know there'll be a lot of change over that for that Welsh team. A lot of guys, Alwyn Jones and whoever else, that are probably getting a bit older now. And it'll be a new Welsh side coming through. But you'll probably get to see just how good Gatland was and how much of an influence it was. But he's clearly a very, very, whether you like his style of rugby or not, he's clearly a very, very good coach.
And also that job for like PVAC, I mean, it's just, it's hard to kind of, expectations are so high for a team that I think isn't actually that good, that it's so hard to really win in that role. Like, so whereas I think if someone was to come in, a new coach was to come in with Scotland, it's almost a little bit easier because expectations are so low that actually next Six Nations you win like two games or like one game and come close, people are like, give him time, he's building a squad, don't worry about it. Because that was with Cotter at the start, he had
his
one
first
Six
Nations was I think we lost them all, didn't we?
Yeah
Greg is the only coach that hasn't had that from when he started.
Yeah, yeah.
Cotter was kind of done really well at the tail end of his career. So, I mean, every other, like you say, every other Scotland coach just had kind of the blank slate, and the expectations are so low that even you, if you just play some nice rugby and almost win, then that's a positive. And then as years go on, you expect more.
It's weird how like the narrative changes like retrospectively, but I was reading an article back from like 2011. And someone was chatting about Andy Robinson's brought in like a free flowing attacking game to Scottish rugby, and I was like, who would ever say that now?
Who was writing that?
But then it's just compared to like Frank Haddon years
true.
It's just, you know, the comparison is whatever came before it, right?
Who was your first Scotland coach?
Robinson.
Robinson.
Yeah, Andy Robinson. Yeah. I think he wanted to. When he was Edinburgh coach, they played great offloading style of rugby. He was, again, like very prescriptive of what he wanted his team to do. But for some reason, I think when he arrived as Scotland coach, I don't know whether it was the back line that we had at the time, and he just felt like we'd be probably suited to maybe. He always tried to bring through an offloading game, and it just never really happened for us for whatever reason. And obviously, we had Dan Parks at 10 at the time, who was a fantastic player, but his style of rugby was more, it wasn't necessarily suited to that open style of game. And a lot of times we would sneak games playing his style of rugby. So I think it was hard, but yeah, you definitely wouldn't describe our type of rugby under Andy Robinson as expansive in any way, shape or form.
And then was it Scott Johnson that tapped you on the shoulder and said, love what you're doing in the back row, but would like to see you have a go at 13.
Yeah, it was a combination of Scott Johnson and Gregor Townsend.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
What was the first thing that went through your mind?
The first thing that went through my mind is what every back row who's ever been asked to play in the backs goes through their mind. It's like, yes, I would love to do this. And then you get a bit of doubt and say, actually, maybe this is a little bit harder than I think.
Yeah.
And everyone says defending at 13 is the hardest place on the pitch.
Yeah.
And in the end, I was just like, I'll give it a go for a while. I had a long-term contract. I thought I'd kind of have a pop at it. Didn't know whether it kind of work out or not.
Yeah.
I was just lucky to have the opportunity to do it, which was kind of great.
Were you, at that point, were you sort of sent away to like learn your trade at like sort of like club level? Was that how
sent away
out?
To Stirling County? To kind of learn how to play 13, and then kind of had extra sessions at Glasgow at the time, trying to learn different things. Mm. But I played at the time. Stirling were in the B&I Cup, but they were also almost getting relegated from the Premiership, so they were effectively playing a second team in the B&I Cup. So I had one trip down to, I think it was Plymouth, and we got beat 65-3, and in my head I think this has been a terrible mistake. I don't know why. I played awful. It was just one of those, I was like, I need to go back to the back row. And I think the next week, for some reason, after watching that game, Gregor gave me a chance against Toulon, and everything went quite well. And then before you know it, you're like,
Toulon game at home? Or
Yeah.
It was raining, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember it, because I randomly remember Hogg making like a sweet break in that game, and then Nico being on the wing, maybe?
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Because I guess how soon after you came out from Sale did that happen?
So I came back from Sale and then had a... In pre-season, I'd got a neck injury and then ended up sort of trying to play a couple of games and my neck wasn't quite right, and then had a kind of extended time. So I literally probably only played about 3 games since I came back, and then was kind of training back, kind of got to full fitness, and they said, that's when they kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, do you want to give this a go? So it was quite early on from when I came back, and there was always something in my head that thought, do you know what? Maybe if I stayed at back row for a bit longer, you know, you never know what could have happened. But I'm really glad that I gave it a shot, and I think it worked out all right in the end.
Was it positioned with Scotland in mind, or was it very Glasgow specific?
It was positioned with Scotland in mind, yeah. Because it was from, I think it was initially Scott Johnson's kind of idea that Gregor was on board with. And at the time we had some really good centres, but we didn't have a lot of strength and depth. Whereas back rows we had a lot of good back rows and a lot of strength and depth. So I think they more saw it as, you've got a great chance. And the ironic thing was, as soon as I changed, there was a bunch of guys that came through and played really well. Like Mark Bennett then came through and started playing really well. Alex Dunbar went on a huge run of form, and it just seemed like this terrible decision. So it was done with that in mind. And that was obviously a big part of the decision as well. You think, as much as you always back yourself, if you play well at back row, you'll get a chance. I could sort of sense that I probably wasn't. I don't think I was Scott Johnson's sort of back row, so it probably wouldn't have worked out.
And then, because I hadn't realised you'd been on the bench for the World Cup quarterfinal and that you'd come on.
Yeah. I did. I only played the South Africa game and then was on the bench for the Australia game. Yeah, so I came on, I think Mark Bennett scored straight away. Obviously nothing to do with me whatsoever, but maybe it's just my influence.
I saw you at that ruck causing a nuisance.
I was on the other side. I was the first to celebrate with him because I was fresh. I think that was how I was involved. So I played the last 20 minutes of that. Because that's where I thought my 100% record of Australia was, but then I blocked the last 5 minutes of that out.
I mean, not to bring up bad memories, but what was the kind of like few hours after that game like?
It was pretty dark. Obviously the game itself, we felt like we played really well. Maybe not better than Australia, but we certainly felt like we could have easily got over the hump. And then to have it taken away on a bad refereeing decision is really hard. And then we kind of did what you would kind of expect us to. We got back to the hotel, everyone was a bit down. And then we got the tube into London and then got pretty smashed. I can't even remember what nightclub we ended up at, but we ended up having a good night out. But I think it took a lot of guys kind of weeks and months to get over it, because just the circumstance of it all was pretty miserable.
Were in the changing room, were people sort of like cursing Joubert's name? Was that the kind of main emotion? And presumably, there wasn't a post-match function then or anything? Because presumably he would have had to be there.
I actually don't even remember. I feel like there might have been a really brief one. I think it was like, let's just get out of here as soon as we can.
A Sunday as well. Yeah. So maybe.
I think it was kind of like turn up, grab a bit of food and just get on the bus and let's get out of here.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't to be seen by anyone.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Vern had gone outside and was banging on his door to try and say something. But yeah, it was mainly, I mean, there's only so much that you can say about the ref. I mean, it's done. He's made a bad decision.
Yeah.
It looks a bit cowardly running off. Well, he knows he's made a bad decision. Before you know it, you're just thinking, well, it's over. Mm. What becomes hard then is you watch them play Argentina the next week and you think that's a game that we could have won.
Definitely.
It's easy to kind of say, I mean, I'm not sure we would have beaten New Zealand in the final, but...
You got the momentum at that point.
You got the momentum. Yeah, you never know.
It'd be like a home final as well. So you must have been part of the kind of infamous Vern Cotter pre-World Cup training camp with the rabbits and everything. Was it as sort of like austere and Spartan as it came across?
It was pretty surreal. I mean, we'd done for Glasgow, we'd done marine camps in the past, but these French commando guys were just, they were a different level, not in the fact that they were more severe. It's just like they didn't really care about anything. And we obviously couldn't understand what they were saying. So we didn't know where they were leading us. Like, we didn't get told anything at the time. We were just on this walk. We'd done all these kind of team building exercises, a bit of fitness, a bit of like climbing on things.
Yeah.
And then we just got led on this big expedition up to the top of the Pyrenees. Arrived there, and there was some rabbits involved. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say or I'm not allowed to say, to be honest.
Pretty sure Jim Hamilton's broken all of
that. Yeah, he said
already.
He said most of it, so I think you know what happened.
When you came out of the camp, we were sort of all thinking like, oh, that was just what, that's like brought us all together. That was like amazing bonding. That's going to make us a better team. Or was just sort of like, do I have to go to the middle of nowhere and potentially murder, potentially not murder an animal? Like to be a better rugby team?
I don't even think we thought about it in that detail. It's like you'd been through it was done. You'd had the whole of pre-season, which is miserable anyway. And then if you've done pretty well and you get a chance in the games before, you can go to the World Cup. Did it necessarily make us more together as a team? I don't know, probably not, but you try different things to bring people together. Sometimes there's nothing better than just having a few beers. And the ironic thing was when we went away from the Pyrenees, the next stop was Perpignan, and we did a few days training, and then we had a few beers at the beach club. And as much as anything else, I think that was just kind of a great experience. Yeah. It was a great release after all the training that's going on, and these French commandos were quite far away by that stage, which was great.
Cod is like a rural Kiwi, though. They're just like different breed when it comes to that sort of stuff. Yeah. You can't really log killing animals and drinking beer, sort of their vibe. Is because interesting with Cotter is it feels like he's not someone who would be like get that emotionally close to players, but a lot of players seem to, don't know whether like love him is the right word, but definitely like massively respect him.
I think that's the right word. Like, you really respect Vern. He clearly is a good guy. I mean, he's not someone that you would have that many conversations, but he very much keeps himself to himself. He's quite an introverted sort of character, and he's got a real presence about him. You can see he's got that stare, which is kind of great as a coach, because you can get players to pretty much do whatever you want a lot of the time. But yeah, I mean, I remember obviously that trip, but what I also remember is he loves the guitar, and he loves like playing on the guitar. So I remember being around a campfire with Vern, and he was playing the guitar while people were singing around him. It was just this surreal experience. The last thing you expect, a bit of Kumbaya with Vern Cotter in the French Pyrenees. But yeah, he absolutely loved it. But yeah, I think he was a guy, he was someone that you could really respect as a coach. We obviously knew that he had loads of experience, and he was clearly, I think he was a good guy as well. So I think there was a bit of sadness with the way that he kind of left, but then everyone was a big, Gregor had done so well with us at Glasgow that we could see why it was the case.
Yeah.
Can I take you right back to the beginning of your professional career? Border Reavers, obviously thus disbanded, and the sort of perennial talk in Scottish rugby circles, or at least in the nerdy circles that we hang out with, is the need for that third pro team again. What was it like in that atmosphere? You've just been given your first sort of pro contract, and then the team is essentially disbanded. What were the sort of the last few days and weeks like?
It was really weird. I mean, obviously, like you say, it was my first experience of a professional club, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. Looking back now, we had a really good team. We had like Simon Danielli, Chris Custer, we had guys like Stuart Grimes. We had lots of guys who would then go on and did really well elsewhere. And for some reason, we just had a terrible season. It didn't work out the way we wanted. So I think we got told we were getting disbanded. We had lots of the season to go. It was something like 10 games to go. And before then, we also lost Alan Tate, was our defensive coach. Yeah. George Graham was our forwards coach. And they both just left halfway through the season. It's like they're just going full-time with Scotland. So it was really,
Bates,
you knew. You
head
knew,
coach?
What's that?
Was it Steve Bates?
Bates, yeah. Steve Bates was head coach. So you knew it was kind of happening. And the last bit of it was really strange. We only won 3 games through the whole season. And we'd turn up for training because a lot of the guys knew they were losing their job or not getting a contract at the end of the year. You turn up for training and it was like, right guys, there's a few guys are going to play golf, so you can go do that if you want. Some guys are going out and play a bit of touch on the back pitches. There's a few guys be going to the gym, so yeah, just do what you want. And then we'd maybe do that for a couple of days and then team run. It was a lot more, this was like the last couple of weeks, but it was very relaxed. And I just thought, this is really surreal. This wasn't quite what I was expecting with professional rugby.
Was there a sense that the club was like sort of on an upward trajectory and actually given time, it would have worked? Or was there a sort of a, you know, an understanding that maybe the Borders is like too sort of tribal and just doesn't quite work, sort of, you know, isn't viable maybe commercially?
Yeah, I think we never got the widespread buy-in from the whole of the Borders. You spoke to the guys that, we had a lot of guys that were from the Borders, and that's what they would say, you know. And if they could kind of bring it all together, it would be a fantastic place for a pro side, mainly because it'd be such a tough place for teams to come to. Yeah. I don't think teams liked going to Netherdale anyway, but with a big crowd, I can imagine it'd be even worse. But yeah, I mean, players you can see that commercially things are viable or not, but you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. But you can see the number of people that are watching you. You can see the newspaper story, headlines about how much money the SRU was in debt at the time. So I think we knew it was going to happen, and it seemed like we had a terrible year that year, but the year before they've been quite good. Mm. So I think I don't know whether they're waiting for the Borders to have a bad year and then to take them away. But I'd love to see a third pro team, but unless it's commercially viable, it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah. And then what was the next step after Borders then to Glasgow?
Next step was to Glasgow. Yep. So I was really close to joining Edinburgh actually at the time. And then Sean Lanine managed to kind of whisper sweet nothings in my ear.
So was there a mini bidding war from Edinburgh and Glasgow?
It
for
certainly
you?
Wasn't a bidding war. Obviously, both owned by the SRU. So it's like, we'll definitely pay him this. It's like, we'll pay him this as well. Let's just let him make the decision that he wants to make. But I got promised at the time that Kelly Brown definitively was not going to sign for Glasgow Warriors. And then I signed, and then Kelly signed a week later. I remember being like, this might be a bad decision in hindsight.
Absolute stitch up.
But I think I ended up at, I think it was the right place for me in the end. So even though at the time I was probably pissed off for a couple of years after that, actually.
But 07, still at, not Hughenden, in Firhill by 07?
First year, well, I think they played at Firhill before, but yeah, I never got to experience Hughenden, the old school of Hughenden.
So we went straight into Firhill. And then 07-11, then what was it like making that move from what would have been the sort of Magnus League or the early days of the Pro 12 down to Sale? Completely different experience?
Yeah, it was. At the time, I was really excited about it. I think you obviously got an idea about the Premiership and English rugby, and you think it's going to be kind of, for European League alongside with the French, it's going to be quite really up there in terms of professionalism and the quality of play.
And?
The quality of play, yes. Maybe the professionalism, not quite. I had some interesting experiences at Sale. I had a great time. I had a great 2 years there. Yeah. I had some great characters that are playing there with me. Guys like Sam Tutupo, Andy Powell was there when I was there.
Oh, you're highly impressed.
It was awesome. The first year we finished sixth, and it was our goal to finish sixth. And it was a fantastic atmosphere. The next year, we lost our first 8 games in a row. We'd lost the London Welsh, kind of the 7th game of those, and it was like, right, the club might get disbanded if I thought, God, this is happening again. and just the rest of the next 4 months was just pure misery. It went to old school, kind of 3 to 4 hours of just mauling per week to try and turn it around. The worst thing about it is it worked. We actually got a lot better doing it. So, it was an interesting experience, one that I really enjoyed, and it was great to kind of go back up the road after that had been done.
Was the mauling piece, was that when Steve Diamond fully came involved?
Yeah, Good Times Dimes got involved at
Good
that stage.
Times Dimes, what a man.
He was director of, I think he was director of rugby, and then stepped back into kind of the head coach role once things weren't going so well. So I had 3 different coaches when I was at Sale in the course of 2 years. I had Steve Hanks, Brian Redpath and Steve Diamond. He's given great structure to that Sale side, but he is an interesting character. He's a good coach, but he's a really interesting character. I remember one of the things I remember and I'll never forget was Danny Cipriani. So when I was there, the second year, he arrived. And one of the Sundays we had training, and I think he turned up half an hour, 45 minutes late. And the punishment that they decided was most apt for Danny was to stand on a chair at the side of the training pitch completely naked while we were doing fitness in the like down up things called Malcolm's
next to him.
So we did that for about half an hour with him standing there the whole time. And Sale's training ground is pretty much, I think you can actually see what's going on the pitches from the motorway.
Yeah,
so it's not
as
if it's a private off the beaten track. And then we all stood at the side to watch Danny then do a few of these Malcolms completely naked himself. Yeah.
Oh, so he had to do the exercise naked?
Yes.
Oh my God.
After watching us naked. And I just thought this is a really surreal experience. It's not what I expected. But it probably worked. He wasn't late again, I'll tell you that for sure.
I know. And did you and Richie Gray go at the same time? Or was he a bit later?
I went the year before and then Richie came the year after. Yeah.
He heard about all the good things. naked exercising. He's like, I'm coming to Sale.
So I almost feel mildly guilty because I had the first year of it where it was great fun.
Yeah,
and we did
yeah.
quite well. And he had the second year of it where it was pure misery for 6 months. And he didn't like it. Yeah, he didn't like it.
And then because we had Johnny Beattie on the pod, and obviously Richie's done a lot in France. Have you ever thought about the trip out to France?
Yeah, I would have loved it if a club was interested. I don't think I was Simone enough to make it out there.
They don't like their kind of more athletic back row. They like maybe a little bit more meat on the bone.
Johnny's listening to this now. Cheers, Johnny's
crying. He's a little bit bigger.
absolutely true. They seem to like just big units.
Yeah.
At no stage in my career was that me, even when I was a centre. So, it never worked out. I would have loved to try it. But, you know, some of the stories you hear about France, some people go and have amazing experiences.
Yeah.
Some people go and have awful experiences. It just completely depends on the club and, you know, how different things work out.
So during that bad time of sale, do you use like WhatsApp Dodds and you're like, hey man, what's up, any spots open for a keen back row?
It didn't happen exactly like that,
yeah,
but obviously I was open at the time to going back up, and in the 2 years that I was away, Glasgow kind of went from strength to strength, and I think the last year they got beaten by Leinster in the semi-final, the Pro 12 then, and played really well. Just got beaten at the end of the semi-final. And I thought it was an awesome opportunity to hopefully go back up there and potentially win the league with Glasgow. And obviously that's how it worked out in the end. I was lucky to get the chance to move back up. If Toulon had come a calling, then who knows what would have
happened. Maybe I think about
What were the sort of, having sort of left Glasgow, come back to such success, like what were the biggest changes that drove that? Because, you know, it was a team that was finishing like near the bottom of the pile, you know, to winning the league over not that many years. You know, what was sort of driving that?
It was a range of things. Obviously, I think we had a spine of guys that stuck around for a while that, you know, were really passionate about Glasgow doing well. And guys that I mentioned before, like even the kind of Pete Horns and the Bobby Arleys came in a little bit later than that, but even guys like Al Kellogg and Graham Morrison, John Barkley when he was there. And there was kind of always kind of a steely edge to it. And then we just seemed to like pick up more and more quality as well to playing squad. And then when we actually were challenging for it, we had the Nico Matawalus, the Leone Nakarawas that would kind of just add that little bit of extra, which got us over the line. But it came from initially just... Yeah, Sean Lanigan kind of gave us a structure, and it was a bit more of a kind of basic game plan initially, but we just kind of learned how to win games. It sounds like a bit of a cliche, but we probably did, and realised that we actually weren't rubbish Scottish players.
yeah.
That we could beat pretty much any team in the league, and you just build a bit of confidence and the momentum helps. And I think that's what holds Scotland back a lot of the time, is just having that confidence when it's close at the end of a game to know that you're going to get over the line, and it can't just be switched on. It's something that comes from games and just having that experience of doing it.
Are there sort of like psychologists and sort of sports, like mental skills coaches that the SOU and these teams, the pro teams, employ?
Yes, there is. Usually with Scotland, not necessarily with the club sides. But yeah, while I was 2011 World Cup, we had a psychologist that came to the World Cup with us. 2015, I think there was someone, I think actually it was some sort of French Marine Commando guy. But he didn't do any...
He just had a sack of rabbits with him the whole time.
He didn't do any... I didn't do much with the players. Maybe I think it was just the leadership group and Vern. It was like Vern's the guy, French guy that Vern would chat to. But to get that edge.
Yeah.
And I know they used someone for the past World Cup as well. So it's something they've definitely looked into. And I don't know. It's a really hard thing to gauge if it's successful or not, isn't it? I mean, how much do you apportion to kind of the psychologist that comes in and speaks to a few players?
It's interesting with all the stuff with Finn, and it feels like there's been this chat about this leadership group, and there's been a bit of a kind of refreshing of that group, where previously it was your Laidlaws and your Barclays. And I think a lot of the chat seemed to come out that Laidlaw was a very strong presence, especially with Finn. How did you find Laidlaw as a captain?
Yeah, he was a good captain. He was always extraordinarily passionate about Scotland. I think anyone could tell that he was passionate about getting results. And he's quite unwavering in how he saw that. But I think he knew, obviously, Finn was extraordinarily talented, took him under his wing a little bit. And obviously for them two playing together at 9 and 10, they had a really strong relationship between the two of them. And he'd maybe
provide a bit more direction to Finn when he needed it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was useful for him at the time, definitely. And having Laidlaw's experience next to him, it does help. I mean, you can. It's really hard to completely. Finn is a bit of a maverick, so you can never completely.
You just can't
shepherd him and do certain things, and hopefully he realizes his potential to do whatever he needs to do.
Who do you think's more passionate about Scotland, Greig Laidlaw or Al Kellogg?
Al Kellogg, by an absolute mile.
Al Kellogg, I think, really? Must be like the most passionate man about just like Scottish rugby.
He's on the payroll now as well, though, so he's got to be.
Yeah, that is true.
He does live and breathe Scottish rugby more than and Glasgow Warriors.
He does.
And it's such a great influence for kind of both of them for a long period of time.
He's just got we always chat about the most Scottish accent in the world. Like,
it sounds like somebody doing a Scottish accent.
Yeah.
Like, I always think that Al Kellogg sounds like somebody, you've asked someone to do an impression of Al Kellogg and they've done it.
Yeah.
You almost need that as a Scotland captain. It's hard to be a really good Scotland captain without a serious accent.
There's one other thing I saw online that you got a nickname called Inferno. What's that? And Skeletor.
What's the story?
There's no particularly good story about it. I mean, Verno Inferno, I think that's where it came from. I wish there was a better story than that. And Skeletor was just because I was incredibly skinny. I think I got given that when I was kind of under 19. The ironic thing is, have you seen Skeletor? He's an absolute beast.
I
owned that one. I was like,
fair.
We've been going for over an hour now, lads.
Do you want to do a quick little quiz?
A quick quiz? Is it the Richie Vernon quiz?
It's like, well, actually, we used one of them, which was the three teams that you got 100% record against.
Yeah, go on.
But I'll give you one Glasgow one. It's actually quite apt because, obviously, played with Pete Horn. He just got re-signed. But Pete Horn was the sixth player to reach 400 points for Glasgow Warriors at the weekend. Who do you think are the five other players?
I forgot. So little.
Dan Parks.
Yet. So Dan Parks is there. I mean, these are legend names out of the Warriors. Four you should be bashing out.
I'm sure I should.
Rui Jackson.
Rui, Big Jacko.
Oh, yeah.
Donkey Weir.
The pudding.
Tommy Hayes, guys.
Tommy Hayes. Oh, there you go. And then one other one who is currently the most famous man in Scottish rugby, probably.
Finn.
So that's your six men who've got 400 points.
All big names.
Nice. Yeah, all big names.
Very, very big names.
Actually, the other thing I saw, this is all from that guy on Top of the Moon who does all the stats.
Kevin Miller, yeah.
His George Horn had it was the sixth game where he scored two tries at the weekend.
He's an absolute freak.
He is a freak.
Incredible, yeah, absolutely incredible. He's just got that skill of, Chris Ashton had it for a while with England. Always in the right place at the right time, and he's got loads of gas, so he can finish a lot of it himself. So yeah, his try scoring record for Glasgow is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it was something like low 20s out of 54 games. But actually, a lot of those 54 has been off the bench as well. So it's not like he's playing full games. So I think he's like try per minutes ratio is almost like 1 in 80, or like close to 1 in 100.
I think it's Kevin Miller once again with his stats that, compared to other top-class nines in the world who've played like over 50 first-class games, his try involvement and assist ratio is better than anyone in like the last 5-10 years. Like better than Perenara and people like that. It's amazing.
So, last quiz question. You obviously played forward and back for Scotland. What year did the last person, Scottish player, play forward and back for Scotland?
I'm not sure the motor car was invented at this stage. 18.
Oh, is it that long ago? I thought it was that guy Roland Reed. Didn't he play on the wing and flanker for Scotland?
The information I have to hand says no. 1878. So, yeah.
1878 to 2015.
It's like 130 year gap.
It was, if someone had told me that was the length of gap when I was making the decision, I'd be like 100%. I mean, if nothing else, it's a great stat to be able to say to people.
To be fair, because obviously Botti has done that for Is it La Rochelle? Yep. La Rochelle. It's like Botti and Vernon, two lads. They've made the
names
move.
Just roll off the tongue, don't they?
Someone told me that this obviously is not part of the quiz, and I can't remember who the names are, but I think seven people have done it in a World Cup.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One was big Australian number 8 who played on the wing.
Oh, Samu.
Samu, yeah. Yeah. And then the rest of them were kind of Namibia or whoever else. But
Right.
It's amazing who manages to pull these stats out.
Yeah, I know.
People like us.
I think we can finish it up there. I think what we asked Johnny when he was on a few weeks back, because he's the best player he's ever played with. So we'll chuck that one your way to finish things off as well.
That's a really difficult one. Do we played with or played against, or can be either?
Either or. Both.
Played against could be any of the New Zealand back row that I got hiding from on my first start. I remember while the hacker was on, someone told me you've just got to stare into your opposite man's eyes for the whole of the hacker.
Oh,
so just staring out Kieran Reid for the whole of it, and he definitely got the better of me in that match. And then played with, I mean, I've been, in terms of pure talent, someone like Nico Matawalu could do things, and Leonie actually could do things that I'd never seen anyone do.
Yeah,
I mean, you maybe don't get the consistency of it, but for 2 years, I mean, no one could tackle Nico. He just step everyone around him. I think from a pure talent perspective, maybe not a completely rounded player, but he did something that I'd never seen anyone else be able to do.
Do you think, just last night, you're going to do any more broadcast stuff? Because you've done some stuff for Alba back in the day. Do you do any broadcast stuff at the moment?
Nothing at the moment. Did the odd bit on Rugby Roundup on BBC Scotland on a Sunday, which was good fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It's hard. Obviously, I live down south now. So it's a lot more difficult, I think, when you're away from Scotland, it can make things a little bit more difficult. I mean, yeah. I really enjoy it, and actually, when you're out of touch, when you're not involved with the squads every weekend, it makes the whole thing a little bit harder. But definitely something I think about doing in future, but not right now. I'm all about the business world.
Well, look, if there's any producers out there that want a bit of Richie Vernon, come get us. You have to come through us now, though. We're his agents.
Yeah.
So we charge an extraordinary commission.
For both production and financial management.
Exactly. Yeah. we take all of that. So, Richie, thank you so much for being generous with your time this evening and telling some great stories. We will be back next week, hopefully after a big win against Italy, or we will be here in the pits of despair. Either way, we'll be back with you. Stay in touch on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and please send us your feelings and emotions into the mailbag, thistlerugby@gmail.com. Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.